and thank you for listening to episode 36 of 60 Minutes With. I'm Dave, and in this episode I'm going to be joined by Tina as we chat with an award-winning actress whose career so far has not only greatly entertained us, but also given her the opportunity to amass a load of fantastic stories that you're going to hear about. So please sit back, relax, and get comfortable as we spend, and regular listeners will probably be aware of this already, a little bit over 60 minutes with Kate Dickie. Right, first of all, obviously, Kate, thank you so much for joining myself and Tina this evening. We're so looking forward to it. Tina, you've been shaking in excitement, haven't you?
Oh, Tina, you know, I am so grateful you asked me to come on. And I was talking to Tina a wee bit earlier and just saying that Tina had got in touch with me on Twitter, and I happened to be going to the Wales Comic Con a couple of weeks later, and Tina was passing by there, and it was like she appeared in front of me. And I just felt I'd known you for, and I think I flung myself into your arms and got a right good hug, didn't I? So,
can we be best friends, Kate?
You could be my friend for sure.
Oh, thanks. Oh, I'm so made up.
You give a great cuddle, and I'm always up for a good cuddler, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Love my cuddles.
Well, us Welshies, us Celts have got to stick together, haven't we?
See, that's it. We're not always like angry and fighting. We like our cuddles and we like our contact.
It's a cutching Welsh. Have you heard
it's
that?
It's a what?
A cutch.
It's called a cutch.
Yeah.
I like that. A cutch. Yeah. I might be going around Glasgow asking for cutches.
And what is it? You had a cutch and a sus as well, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a sus as well. Sus is a kiss.
Is it a cutch and a sus?
Sus.
Right, there we are. See, I am obsessed with language. I love learning new words. And I'm also really big on the Scottish language. And I'm always like teaching my daughter like Scots words, and then whenever anyone says it's slang, I'm like, it's not slang, it's our language.
Well, it is, isn't it?
It is. And I love the words that you get with all different languages, and the sort of little shortcuts and the rhythms and things. I love it. And sometimes my partner doesn't believe me when I say words, and we have to phone my stepmom and I have to say, tell him it's a real word. Because he's just like, no, you're just making that up now. That's just nonsense. I'm like, no, you've not been taught the proper language. So you can imagine we will be having haggis on Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
Which is just about to come up. And we do a little wee recital. I do a very quick one, or we'll be there all night, but I do a wee quick ode to the haggis or whatever it is. It's not ode to the haggis, actually, but we do a little thing, and I have my veggie haggis because I'm veggie and they have their real haggis. Yeah, so that's my, I love language. I love that cutch and sus. I might sussing and cutching to heart's content from now on.
Well, that was the third Comic Con we'd been to in Wrexham.
Is it?
In all honesty, Kate, in all of the three that we've been to, I have never seen Tina so excited as when she saw you.
Oh, that's so nice. I hope I wasn't a horrible disappointment.
No, shut up, Dave. She's going to think I'm a stalker. Does it freak you out, though? You know, if you meet people like me and they're a bit like, well, I don't think I was over the top, but I was very excited to meet you. And I suppose it's different because it wasn't the Game of Thrones thing with me. It was everything else that you've been in.
Yes, I found it was never before then, but with Game of Thrones, I think it's just become, it's such a big phenomenon, Game of Thrones, and it's become so loved and such a kind of part of people's culture almost now that I think it does overwhelm people. But I do find that some, especially like young kind of younger girls and things that are just like love the show and are so excited to meet anyone off it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, are just overexcited or want to cuddle you or, you know, just have a chat and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I can get like that with people as well. So I do, you know, I do understand that when you're, you know, starstruck. In fact, I was drooling all over poor Tom Courtney. I went to the Dinard Film Festival with Couple in a Hole, and I saw 45 Years, which is
it's
just
so amazing, isn't it?
Isn't it amazing?
Oh God,
I loved that film so much, and was absolutely mesmerised by Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtney, and I thought it was beautifully written and shot and directed. So then I met Tom the morning after, and honestly, I literally drooled down the front of his shirt, and I was like, you're amazing. You know, I really, so, you know, I get like that. So I do get it. It's just, I just kind of think, oh, don't be like that with me because I'm so ordinary. There's no need. I'm going to, you know, you're going to, I'm just kind of, But yeah, it's kind of, it's unusual, but I do understand that, you know, because I can get like that myself. So I just try and be as kind as possible.
You are very nice.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. As we can attest to.
Honestly, can I just say to your listeners, I have not passed any money into their hands. There has been no bribes, no monetary things going on here. This is not... well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Has there ever been a point in any time in your career where you've maybe been even a little bit scared because fans have been a little bit too forward with you? Or?
No, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I've been scared as such. I did. Where was I? Where I kind of got past... between the kind of very enthusiastic drunk guys at one point who were all kind of wanting photos, and I kind of got passed around the circle kind of like, you know, like a kind of teddy bear kind of, you know, but not scared as such. No, I don't, I've not experienced anything like that, you know, like being mobbed or anything. No, that doesn't happen to me. It was just more amusing, and I just thought, get passed down. I think that's the easiest thing to do, is just go with the flow and you know, take it with a pinch of salt, really. But yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't experienced that, and that would be tough. That would be hard. I always remember. I think it's when Sienna Miller was going through. You know, when the press were really hounding her years back. And I remember, always remember, and it stuck with me, her saying, you know, what's the difference of me being on my own and being chased down the street by 10 men? Why is it different? Because they're holding cameras, you know? And I always thought, oh, you know, that is awful and intimidating. And, you know, things like that, it would be really tough, I think, to deal with. But I don't experience that, no. I don't experience things like that, so I'm lucky that way.
Dave didn't really want to start talking about Game of Thrones, and I didn't either, but we've already started to talk about it now.
Yeah, come on.
But I can imagine that that some people, because of the character that you play in it, of Lysa, she's very unpredictable and really lovely and really evil and scary at the same time.
She is a scary person because she's so, as you say, it's her unpredictability. And what the thing with Liza as well is she's really not well, you know, she's ill as well. You know, if anyone knows the books, she's had a lot of, you know, miscarriages and stillbirths. Then she got pregnant by Littlefinger. She was made to have, you know, an abortion by her father, married off to John Arryn, who was a lot old. He was an old man compared to her. And she was in love with Littlefinger all her life. And through those, also her losing her children and her miscarriages, it pushed her over the edge. So by the time she had Robin, she... You know, that's why the way she mothered someone, that's how I interpreted it, was someone that couldn't let go of him that way and was still breastfeeding and still treating him like a baby, you know, and really very unstable. So she was a great character to play because a lot of the time, or most of the time as an actor, you're hiding your feelings as a character. You're sitting in things, or you don't show what you're feeling, or you're saying opposite. But with Liza, oh my goodness, whatever she felt, it was out there, and it was so extreme. It was like she was so extreme in everything. Every emotion was so highly strung. And what a great experience to get to play that.
Yeah,
it was a fine balance, you know, to walk though, because I didn't want, I did want her to have lots of these things in her, and you didn't necessarily know about all her pains from the past, you know, but I wanted to carry them in me, and that made her become who she was, you know, for me, and how I sort of interpreted her as such.
Well, it does come across, because I've read all the books.
I've not read them all, but I read when I took the part on. I wanted to understand where she'd come from, and I thought it would be helpful to go back. And I being someone who'd never really read a lot of fantasy, I thought, wow, the books are amazing.
They are, aren't they?
So unputtable down once you get into them, and so you're like, how did he manage to make up these worlds? Because
it's like medieval
so
Dallas, isn't it, really? Everybody's shagging each other, everybody, and that's the thing about your character as well. And I think that if, you know, another actress could have played her, wouldn't have given her the character that you have, because I think even though she's sort of widely disliked and seen as like, ooh, this evil woman, you can see how pained you are playing her. And the last scene where, well, I'm spoilers here, you know, when Littlefinger pushes you down the moon door, your face is just, that last scene is, you just love him so much.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
But then I'm saying poor Liza, you know, minutes before I had Sansa by the neck and, you know, was trying
she
to...
She deserves it, though. She's such a bitch, isn't she?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean... Yeah, it's interesting. She was a fabulous character to play. And I tell you, what a wonderful, wonderful family almost to belong to, because everyone involved were lovely. And although it was a massive, massive show, it was a really personal time when you were there, you know.
Really? And that's surprising, actually.
The most amazing people work behind the scenes in that. Yeah. The crew, the highest quality in every department, and you know what a joy to work with people who are at the top of their craft, you know.
Did you film all that in Ireland then?
I did. Now, Liza, I was in the paint hall in Belfast. Belfast so much. It's a fantastic city.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were going off to Croatia or Morocco and I'd be waving them off. But no, Liza didn't go anywhere, you know. So, but Belfast is brilliant. And I really enjoy it. I worked there quite a bit, actually, over the years for different things. And I really love that city. Yeah. It's like home from home, coming from Glasgow to Belfast. Yeah. In fact, it's only 15 minutes on the plane, or half an hour or something. But you're only in the air for 10 minutes. So the first time I went on, I sat at the very back of the plane and, you know, she got up to me. I said, oh, I'd love a coffee. I literally just put the coffee to my lips and went, and we're starting our descent. If you could put up your... And I was like, oh, and I kind of obviously looked quite bewildered. And she said, oh, you're all right, because I was like, I just got it. It was the quickest flight I've ever been in my life. So it's brilliant. You just go straight into the city airport. And then 10 minutes later, you're in the city. It's great. I love it.
Oh, so shame you never got to go to Croatia then.
I'd love to go to Croatia. It's a country I would really like to visit. Mm-hmm. And Morocco as well. Yeah. And the different places, I mean, their sets are amazing. You step in a set and you really are on those sets. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, not a lot CGI'd and stuff. They're incredible.
Well, are you going to give us a scoop now and tell us that that Jon Snow's going to come back somehow and that you as well?
You know what? I wish I could give you a scoop. I don't have any scoops apart from ice cream in my freezer. That's the only scoop you'll be getting from me. But Amazon tenterhooks about what's going to happen as everyone else. Yeah. And do you know what I'm thinking is interesting? The next season will be the first season that everyone watches it, not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is the first thing, the whole, you know, and I thought, this is going to be interesting. There's all everyone's not in the, you know, knowing what's happening. There's no, so yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with all the storylines. And what I love about it as well is, I mean, I think when everyone really did stop and go, oh, this is different, is when Ned got killed in the first series and everyone goes, but he's a hero. You don't, you don't kill off the heroes. Mm. You don't kill off the leads. And I think that's when it just people went, oh, this is something different, actually, you know. Mm-hmm. And the depth of the characters and the storylines, nothing's rushed, you know. Storylines will go over weeks and weeks or over series, and I love that, really.
Well, this is going right over Dave's head now. Because
is
Dave doesn't watch TV.
Oh, you don't? Well, no, you don't watch TV?
Well, I do. I watched the first 3.5 series of Game of Thrones.
Well, that's a lot. For me,
it's a lot.
That's three-quarters of the way through.
Yeah, I would like to ask, though, because you brought up a few interesting points there. When you're given a script, as far as, like, fleshing out the character, when you read the script, have you any sort of, like, particular process that you go through that you create a backstory to this character? Or, you know, what do you do when you're given a script?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it depends. Like, with Liza, obviously, I went back to the books and looked at her past that way, because it was, you know, her past was written down. But for characters that don't exist in books, like a new character, I do have a process. The process I've realised I've done, it's kind of developed over the years, but the first thing I'll do is I'll write down loads and loads of questions that I have no answers for in the beginning, but any question that comes up to me about why this or, you know, anything at all, I'll write down, and I keep asking questions, and slowly answers will come, or an answer will come. It might not be the right one, but it gives me a little path to maybe explore. And I like to know the background of my characters. I write out backgrounds for them as well. Not that anyone sees them, or sometimes it might not be right, but I do like to try and create a background, because it's difficult for me, and everyone works differently, but for me anyway, to try and explore depths of a character if they only exist in those pages that you've got, I find hard, because I kind of need to know why they're at that point that you've happened to. You know, I always think, I'll always love films and things or books that you think, we just happened to have stepped in at this point in their lives, but who were they 10 years ago, or who were they 15 years ago, or who are they going to be, maybe, and, you know, and I find those questions really interesting. So, yeah, I've got a kind of process I do. I use a lot of music as well. I look at paintings and photos, and I like looking at street photography and just seeing if I spot things. I don't know what. And it's not necessarily going, oh, there she is, that's who I want to be. It's just more feelings I get from things. Yeah. From images, or like for a while, I think for Those in Peril, which was a movie I did of Paul Wright's, and it's a drama set in a fishing village up in Scotland, and it's about a woman and a boy, a woman and her son, basically. It's about her son, basically, George Mackay. Do you know the actor George Mackay? Young actor. Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. If you don't know him, I'd really recommend looking at any of his films. Yeah. He's incredible. He was in Sunshine and Leith as well.
Oh, I probably do know him then.
Yeah, you will. You'll know who he is if you look at him. Well, he plays the son of me. And basically the story's about a fishing boat that goes out to sea, and of the seven men that go out, only one comes back and the rest drown. Mm. And the one that comes back is George Mackay's character. And the other brother, the mother's son's lost. So it's an amazing film, a lovely film by this great director-writer called Paul Wright. He's amazing. Mm. And it's about grief, and it's about mental health, and it's about love and family and things. Anyway, I yap. So you're long, man.
No, we'll have to look out for that.
Yeah,
we'll have to look out for that one.
My long answer is for her anyway. I got really into Picasso's Blue Women, you know, those paintings. And I printed off some of them, and I would look at them. There was a loneliness about them, and a kind of stillness, and a real, the kind of, there was a loneliness about those images I really liked. And I had other things as well, photos of lots of other things. So yeah, I use quite a lot to build my characters. In those ways at home.
Is that something you've always done since you first started?
No, I mean, in Red Road, I had absolutely no clue what I was doing, really. So I was very lucky to have Andrea Arnold, who, you know, was so amazing to work with and taught me a lot. And it's kind of just come about, I think. I did things like that for theatre. So I did theatre for 10, 15 years before I really got into screen. And so I found film difficult because I was so used to starting a story at the beginning and working your way through, rehearsing it, and then, you know, acting it from the beginning to the end. And suddenly you're doing filming where you could be doing the last... Well, at Red Road, it did happen. We filmed the very last scene, was the very first scene we filmed.
Really? So, wow, that's tough.
That can be tough because you don't have the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? You don't have the kind of baggage from the journey to carry with you. So for me, it's more, I would struggle, I think, to bring depth, I think, if I didn't do backgrounds and write things because you film out a sequence and stuff like that. Another thing I do as well is I take my scenes out of the script and I'll write them out in order just to see where my through line is without, you know, if you're maybe, you're maybe in, you know, the beginning and then you maybe don't appear, you know, till later on. And so I'll put them together and I'll think, well, where have I been and what could I have been doing? And just things like that. That's what I kind of do. Yeah.
I think film that you made with Andrea Arnold was your first film and Andrea's first film as a director as well, wasn't it?
It was.
I think it's, I think that's what attracts me to you more than anything, Kate.
Aww.
Knowing, having seen that film years ago, and it's got to be one of the best films I've ever seen.
Oh,
as
wow.
far as, you know how people talk about the relationship in Don't Look Now, Nicholas Roeg's film?
Yes,
and the sex scene in Don't Look Now is supposed to be the most natural one. And I'm going to talk about your sex scene now, by the way.
You go for it, Tina. Go for it.
I'm going to.
So we're all right.
Well, I think...
I may have to take my jumper off when I get too hot. From embarrassment, but don't worry. No, I'm happy to talk about that. Don't worry.
Well, no, that's one thing that I really admire you for, because you're nude in quite a lot of your films.
Yeah.
But having said that, none of them are for titillation. I suppose in Filth it is a little bit titillating, but absolutely necessary to the film. But Red Road, I think, is the most profound film that I just wish more people could see it. And it's one of those films that I always go on about, you know, have you seen Red Road? Oh my God, you should watch that. It's because Tony Curran is amazing.
Oh, he is incredible in it, isn't he? He's just
fantastic.
Incredible.
But you are just a revelation, even so I'm getting tongue-tied now. But it's...
You know, she was such an incredible person to be given to play. And there were, I just, I don't know what it is about scripts. It's hard to explain what you like about scripts. For me, it's just an instinct thing. And sometimes you just read some and you go, oh, God, I have to. Not I have to, because, you know, but I really want to look after this cat. I want to give them a voice. I want to explore their world. And Red Road was, she was just an amazing character to explore and to play, because I like the same, the rawness of Andrea's writing and the truthfulness and the things never done for anything but for truthful. And I know at the time, you know, and I remember people saying, would, you know, would a woman really do that? And I thought, what do you know what a woman would do, or anybody would do? In those circumstances where you've lost, she lost everything she loved. And had been living and literally like she was numb. And the only way, it's such an interesting thing what she did as well, because the only way Jackie could be part of life was to be, she wanted to help and she wanted to be part of life, but it had to be through a screen, you know. She couldn't, she'd shut herself off so much from the world. And something about meeting Clyde and him being the last person to have set eyes on her husband and child, and he did kill them. He was the last person to see them, and there was, it was like an animalistic something in her, you know, and it became this terribly destructive obsession of wanting to be close to him because he was, but at the same time repulsed by him and wanting to punish him. And she kind of set out for revenge with this sex scene and was never expecting to have an orgasm, that's
remember
for sure, you know.
Watching it for the first time, I saw it and I found it really shocking, but not in a bad way, not in a way that made me think I really don't want to watch this, but it's such a powerful story. And then the way that the story concludes as well, that with that redemptive feel, I think a lot of stuff I've read about it, you know, a lot of people sort of think that it's a bit depressing, and I think it's really uplifting because of the end of it.
Yeah,
I do.
But it's a really uplifting end, and I know I say really uplifting, but for the from where she came from and that, you know, where she was at, there was such a hopeful end for her. You know, she was reconnecting again with the world, and she was starting to feel again, you know, like have real feelings again, and she managed to get some kind of resolve. It wasn't perfect, but that's why it works, because life isn't perfect. And you know, and Clyde at the end, and Tony was amazing, you know. He, I thought Tony was incredible at showing Clyde's vulnerability. I mean, what I also thought is interesting about the movie is you start off and you know, you think that Clyde's going to be the kind of one that you should be wary of and that, but it's me, it's Jackie that's acting completely out of control, and, you know, and in the sex scene, it's Clyde that's left vulnerable. You know, I get up, I'm not staying, you know, I won't look at him, I'm out the door, and he's left vulnerable and
what's it like when you have to film a sex scene like that? Because, I mean, that sex scene's vastly different from the one with James McAvoy. You've got to shag some amazing blokes in these films, haven't you, Kate?
I don't think about it that way. Oh, no, no, no.
I mean, God, you know, come on, you shag Tony Kelly. Like... He's so hot, isn't he? James McAvoy, he's really hot. I'm trying to think, who else have you shagged in films?
God,
well, James McAvoy's got to be like, you know, but do
You know, I look at them so business. I don't mean business like that sounds strange, but the way I deal with them, this is it basically, is if I take on a character, I have to take them on 100%, and I have to go where they go. I have to go in their journey, and there's no point then in taking them on and then not being it's not that's the wrong word, but not being willing enough to go the whole hog. You know that if it's right for the script, I mean, I've turned down you know, a lot of other stuff that I've felt isn't necessary for the script or isn't maybe as put there for the wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But for the times I have done nudity or sex scenes, for me, they've been an important part of the script. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't feel if you, they're not as vulnerable as, say, when you're having to maybe be very vulnerable on screen and touch into very vulnerable emotions, not even about crying, but just making yourself vulnerable. So I kind of deal with it that way. I just think, you know what, it's just another day at work. It's another scene. It's another part of our life that you're playing. And the less fuss you make, the easier it is in everyone around. And I don't mean the less fuss, that sounds wrong, but the less I just say to people, can we just treat it like any other scene? I know there's closed sets and obviously, you know, respect and that, but I don't want it being made into anything bigger than it is, because you know, it's difficult for the guy, it's difficult for the crew, it's difficult for everyone around, and it's not comfortable, but you've got a job to do.
Yeah.
And your job, and part of that is that. So I kind of just quite matter of fact about it. Believe you me, I'm blushing like mad, and I'm so lucky.
Sorry.
I don't change colour when I blush. This is wonderful thing that I don't know how it's happened, but when I blush, you don't know, because I don't change colour. So I can be absolutely mortified and no one will know. So that's fantastic. And you know, I must say, in anything I've ever done with that, the respect and dignity, and you know, it's all about angles, the scene, what shots are doing. There's no one ever standing about being titillated or anything like that. Everyone's just wanting to get on and get the job done and make it as good a scene as possible. And for Red Road, luckily, Tony and I went to college together. We were at drama school together. We were in different courses, but I knew him, and we actually toured our first professional play together around prisons, actually.
Oh, gosh.
So we had a friendship of old, so we did very little chatting about that scene as well.
Did it make it harder because you were friends then?
Well, we weren't like pals that saw each other every day. Tony, when he'd moved to London, I think, then he was already living in LA, so I hadn't seen him for a while. But what it did give us was, we already knew we could trust each other.
Yeah.
I knew Tony as a part, you know, someone that I knew was a really trustworthy character, and that if we had to go as far as we were going, he would be amazing. And we just kind of made a pact, the only way to do this is to go for it and give it the respect and the what it really deserves, or it's, you know, it's, there's no point. And we ended up having a real giggle. We really did. And actually,
it's so serious, isn't it? And by the way, I'll just mention to anybody listening to this who may think that, you know, that the reason I'm talking about your sex scene in this particular film, that the reason I am talking about it is because it's, again, bringing up Don't Look Now is supposed to be the most natural and beautiful sex scene. I think it's rubbish. I think the sex scene in Red Road is the best sex scene for being realistic and having real feeling in it. And
well,
just being
that means
real.
A lot.
Not
being airbrushed or, you know,
it's really touching.
It was filmed in real time, and that's another thing. There's no kind of, well, I'm obviously, there must be edits and that, but we did, you know, from beginning to end, it was filmed as it was. And Tony, I mean, we were kind of diving under covers to embarrass at first, but we were at it for a few hours. So by the time
were you poor thing being at it with Tony Cullen? How long were you at it for with James McAvoy?
Really bad choice.
I mean, as fantasies go, you know, straddling James McAvoy and strangling him at the same time's got to be.
Oh no, stop it, because you just go in and you're kind of more thinking, honestly, you're thinking more like, right, the angle, we need to do this. And what a gentleman James McAvoy is, an absolute dream to work with.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
Honestly, because if you're doing sex scenes, you want gentlemen, you want, you know. And he's wonderful. And you know, that was a very different type of sex scene,
yeah,
very light.
Well,
you know,
absolutely.
That was, you know, it's in the book again. It was necessary. It was, yeah, you know, yeah, a yeah, totally different feel. And I loved playing her because their yeah, roles reversed. You know, at the beginning, yeah, she was like, oh, I love you, you know. And by the mm, end, you know, she really turned.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, she, I loved playing her, and yeah, that was it. We, you know, you just have to, you just get on with it, and yeah. But you know what was, and Tony and I, as serious as it was, we ended up having a giggle because obviously mm, you do use modesty pads and different things mm-hmm, to, yeah, you know,
yeah,
give yourself a little bit of a, you know, cover. And at one point, anyway, at one point, and you're not allowed to show erections and stuff on screen, yeah, so there's yeah, prosthetics and different things used, so we had to work out different, you know, the mm, logistics of things,
yeah,
and
yeah,
at one point, and we were naked. No, wait a minute, we weren't naked at that point. I got the clothes on, that's what it was. So the clothes were on and we were to get naked.
Yeah.
And then Tony was like, hang on a minute, I can't find my modesty pad. I can't find my modesty pad. And we looked around the room and then he's like, oh, fuck it, forget it. Come on, let's just get on with it. We'll just get on. So I pulled down my trousers to get on with the thing and there was his modesty pad stuck to the back of my calf. I was like, found it. So then... So you know, you can find ways of just lightening it, you know, and it was a really close set for Red Road. We literally had Andrea and our DOP in the room, and at one point one of the electricians came in just to work the lamp, and that was it. There was no monitors, there was no crew, and Andrea did continuity and was, you know, with us every step of the way, and it just became about the scene, and you really get past all that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
I
want to make a good
won,
scene.
You won a BAFTA for that as well.
I did. I won a BAFTA Scotland for yes, that.
Very
which
well
was,
deserved.
Yeah, well done.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, Red Road, it kind of gathered a kind of life of its own, you know, around film festivals, mm, and it was wonderful. Really wonderful film to be part mm, of, and what as I said, a joy to work with Andrea Arnold, who's just yeah, an incredible director and writer.
Well,
so
haven't
spoiled,
you worked with some amazing people?
Oh, yeah.
Shane Meadows,
Shane.
Ridley Scott.
I know, Ridley. Oh,
do you want to talk
him,
about
no,
Shane
no,
first?
Before we get onto that, because I want to keep going, because you reprised the character of Jackie in Donkeys. In 2010.
You know, oh, I'm so pleased you know about this. Because,
yeah. What's, yeah. What's it like when you have to revisit a character, you know, as an actor? What's it like when, you've played this character once and then you're going on to a sequel? What's it like? You know,
But the thing was, this was a really interesting thing. It wasn't a sequel because originally Red Road was part of a trilogy,
mm-hmm,
which didn't quite happen, but it was kind of, there was rules, like a bit like Dogma attached to it, you see. Mm. So there was eight or nine characters created by, Loni Scherfig, I think. And basically the three directors were given these eight characters, and these eight characters had a little paragraph written about them. And each director, writer could took the eight characters and write a film about them, with all the characters had to appear at least once. So Andrea, her script was up first, and her lead character was Jackie. So then Morag McKinnon's one was next. So she made a film with the same characters, but you could make all the relationships different.
Mm.
You know, as long as the character even passed in a bus, that was fine. So then the script came about Alfred. Now, in Red Road, Alfred was my father-in-law. Father-in-law and the mother-in-law.
Yeah,
And so in Donkeys, he became the lead and I became his daughter. So I became the daughter of Alfred, and basically Donkeys is about a man who's dying and he wants to reconnect with his estranged daughter. They've fallen out because he phoned drunk in the early hours of the morning needing a lift home, and my husband went to collect him, and my husband got killed in a car accident on the way back from taking him home. So I blamed my father and stopped speaking to him, and this is him coming back. And have you seen Donkeys?
I haven't seen it, and
it's really worth a look.
We've ordered it. Oh, and it hasn't come.
I think you are going to love it. Do you know what it is? It's a really black comedy.
Yeah.
Completely different from Red Road. And it's a beautiful story about, I mean, James Cosmo plays Alfred in this one.
Yeah.
And him and Brian Pettifer, a wonderful Scottish actor, plays his best friend. And it's about them. It's like a love story between two best friends. And their performances are beautiful. But it's one of those films, and I love them, where you're howling with laughter one minute and then suddenly you're crying, or you're feeling bloody awful because you're like, how could I have been laughing? You know what I mean? Like, there's lots of things that make me do that you're laughing one minute and then you're like, oh, I feel so bad. So Donkeys does that for me, and James Cosmo and Brian, every time I see that movie, I just cry at it because their friendship's beautiful in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was interesting. So it was like revisiting a Jackie, but this Jackie lives in a different life, and this Jackie's still got her daughter alive.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So she, you know, so they could use little bits from your, the wee paragraphs about the characters. You could use any bits you wanted or leave bits out, you know. So I ended up just approaching it like a new character because it wasn't a sequel, you know. She was a new Jackie and there was lots of little similarities about her. But yet she wasn't as unhappy because her child was still alive. And I think that was the difference with Jackie and Red Road, is, you know, her daughter died as well as her husband, and she just couldn't get over that. She just couldn't get over it. And also, you hear in Red Road as it goes on that she bangs in the bus and shouts at, you know, at Clyde, you know, I shouted at her before she left and told her to get out of my sight. It was the last words I said to her, you know. So she's carried this terrible guilt of having shouted at them, get out my sight, you know, they've went out and then they've died. And so she blames herself for so much in Red Road. In Donkeys, Jackie blames Alfred, you know. And so there's, it'll be interesting. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing what you hear.
I'll let you know what we think of it.
And Martin Compson's in it again.
Yeah.
Playing a guy called Stevie. Martin Compson's in Red Road is Clyde's best friend who comes and gets me in the bed and stuff. He's a great actor. He was in, you know, he started off in Ken Loach's Sweet 16. And he's in Donkeys as well. And yeah, it's interesting. Me and his relationship is very different in Donkeys, and that's all I'm saying. That is all I'm saying. Okay.
Well, Tina mentioned as well about the directors that you've worked with. And just to give you a heads up, Tina's all-time favourite movie is Blade Runner. Directed, of course, by Ridley Scott.
By Ridley.
So earlier on today, we revisited Prometheus as well.
Did you?
We did. And we were watching that. What was it like being in that? And please tell us any stories of, you know, working with Ridley Scott and the very idea. Were you a fan of like the Alien movies going into it?
Oh gosh, yeah, I was a massive fan of Ridley Scott. Massive. Thelma and Louise and Gladiator, and I mean, so many of these movies. Alien, obviously, fantastic movie. Blade Runner. I mean, you could go on forever. I think Ridley's an amazing man, and having the chance to work with him was beyond anything I'd ever thought would be possible. And working with the cast that I did, the most loveliest, wonderful cast, talented people, I couldn't quite believe it at first. I honestly thought they maybe made a mistake. honestly, because it just seemed, you know, that way. I just didn't quite. And I kept thinking, I'm sure someone's going to notice me soon. I'd be like, who are you and why are you here, you know? It was a great experience. He was wonderful to work with. And, you know, Ridley was an artist, and as an artist, and his storyboards are like works of art. And he's really lovely to talk to. And we had a great time making Prometheus. It was great. I really enjoyed myself in that movie. Really did. It was lovely.
I think you're still alive as well.
Oh, don't.
Yeah, we do. We watched it. We watched it earlier.
A small wave of a finger or something. No, I don't think Ford did. I think Ford was too wimpy. She just stood and quivered. Couldn't even breathe. I know. And then was kind of swatted to the side.
He does just swat. You're still, you're on that spaceship.
You are. You're in the sequel. You are in the sequel.
That'd be so cruel, wouldn't it?
It was great fun. It was really great fun to work in it. And the sets were incredible. Really
did
incredible.
Did you pinch anything?
Did I pinch anything?
You did.
No, I don't pinch nothing from any of my sets.
Oh, for God's sake. You can't. You worked on Prometheus and you didn't even pinch your helmet.
No, pinch a helmet. I'm just going to, what's that in your hand by? With the wires trailing on the floor.
I just wouldn't be able to stop myself from nicking something.
I never take things, ever, for my characters. Yeah. It's interesting. I actually got asked this in an interview the other week, and they asked if I'd taken in from The Witch, and I said, well, I thought about my wee pouch, you know, Catherine's wee pouch that she wears. I wear this kind of leather pouch around my waist. But I tend to leave my characters behind and I grieve them. I really do grieve.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I go through quite a mourning period where I really miss them. But I don't take anything. I leave it all behind and it's like I put them away in a wee box and, you know. So no, I'm afraid I don't have any bits of sets or
a bit of Geigerism.
No, I'm too good a girl. I'd be too worried about getting caught and getting into trouble, honestly, no.
It must have been incredible working on a film with Michael Fassbender's star was on the rise when that came out.
Really lovely. Really generous, funny, lovely, and I could see that I was nervous at the beginning, you know, and you know, I was questioning, worrying that people would notice and chuck me out the fire exit. And he really looked out for me. Everyone did, though. Everyone. Yeah. There was no prob, you know, no divas, no egos going. It was just people want to make the movie. And
you haven't got a bit part in that film. You're like one of the main characters in you're in it all the way through.
She's part of the crew. I wouldn't say one of the main characters, but she certainly ended up going on a real adventure with everyone. And that was really fun. And we shot some of it in Iceland. All the exteriors, and I really enjoyed visiting there. What a beautiful country. I've never been anywhere like that in my life. The landscape in Iceland is just incredible.
It's amazing.
But it was a real honour to be in that and to work with Ridley and see him working with people and to be working alongside lovely, talented people like that. And you've got so many people, Sean and Rafe, and then there was Charlize and Noomi and Idris and
Idris Elba.
All
these men, all these amazing men.
You love your men, don't you?
I can't help it.
Listen, I'm too busy worrying about lines and scripts and things like that.
I'd be awful. Like, it's a good job I'm not an actress because I'd
just be
like
melting at the corner, wouldn't you? We'd just be like, pour you into a glass.
Idris Elba, let me sit on your knee. You'd be like, get this Welsh bitch away from me.
Oh,
terrible.
But yeah, no, it was great fun. Yeah. It was great fun. And really.
Everybody hates that film. I absolutely love it.
We both do, don't we?
It seems to split great. People. I meet people who haven't enjoyed it. I meet people who really love it. And I think, you know, it's like anything, you know, people are entitled to whatever opinion they have. And I don't know, there was a lot of expectation and hype and but I had a great time working on it. I really did. And I can't praise Ridley enough. I really can't, to see him at work and see him working and be part of the team on that was a dream come true for me.
Yeah.
And he's kind and he's funny and he's one of the cleverest people I've ever met, really. So clever. And as I said, you know, you gather around to look at the storyboards, the scenes and their works of art. And, you know,
I would definitely
man.
Have pinched one of them.
Oh!
We'd have to
attach like some security bands on you that you set off alarms, getting your bag searched.
Yeah, that's true. I would.
I think the word is out now. If Tina's ever on a movie set,
I'm never going to be able to invite you to visit me and set. I'll be like, "What's your gear, everyone? Pack away anything. Clear the set.
Yeah. Get the men. Lock the men in the cobble shed."
It's funny that, isn't it? I mean, it's funny just because I was asked about it the other day about Tina. I think, you know, why don't ever want to? Because, you know, you could ask to take little things away on, you know, films, I guess. But it's almost like they wouldn't belong to me. And that's how I feel. They're my characters. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's funny that. Really funny.
Are you a bit method then, do you think, your style of that?
I don't go into character and then stay in character, you know, like with my family and things, but I didn't think I was, but then my partner notices, and also I play quite a lot of dark material and maybe saying quite extreme things or that, or, and so I find, you know, as I get nearer and nearer time to film, and my partner says I start to change, and he'll talk to me and he'll say, I'm looking at him, he's like, where's Kate? He said, you start looking at me differently, and then he has to lie next to me in bed, and of course I'm constantly going over lines, so he just has whispers of fuck, you know, and whatever it is. I mean, that's ridiculous. I don't know any part I've ever played that, but you know, muttering strange and disturbing things next to him, and then whispering in my, you know, not in my sleep, but you know, at night in bed, and he's just like, you're disappearing. And so it's almost like I can, you know, you're stepping more and more into the shoes the closer you get to you know,
well,
filming.
That's one thing that struck me about you when I actually met you in real life, was that seeing, you know, because I've seen a lot of stuff that you've been in and had this impression that you would be a very serious person.
Right.
And
yeah,
take yourself very seriously. And you're not like that at all. No. You're like really lovely and bubbly
and
friendly.
Since Game of Thrones, I do get a lot like, oh, you smile and nice. And I guess when people are watching you and they just, I don't know, you know, I do get that a lot of people. I don't know what people are expecting, but, you know, I think people do get surprised that I can be quite light and you know, I'm not too serious. You know, I'm serious about my work, but as a person, I'm quite lighthearted, you know, and positive. So, but I have such a, I'm so drawn to characters that are struggling and on the periphery of maybe life or on the edges.
Characters, really.
I just want to give voices to people, you know, that I don't know what it is actually. And it's not that I constantly play kind of people on the periphery, but I do seem to be attracted to complicated and not necessarily always likable characters. I find that interesting. You know, that when, because why is someone not likable? Why are they basically unhappy? You know, why are they, what's making them unhappy? And that kind of, I just, you know, it's something I don't know, I'd like to explore, I guess.
While we're on the subject, is what you just said about giving voices to characters, one character that you did give like a literal voice to, and that both myself and Tina were privileged to watch, and if you go to the website, Tina put a review up of it. it's a short, it's a 6.5 minute movie. Mm-hmm. It's BAFTA nominated, which is amazing and well deserved.
Operator.
Now, we've watched this numerous times, and believe me, Kate, we watched it. I remember the first time that we watched it, and subsequent viewing since. Mm-hmm. Every time our knuckles go white when we watch it. Oh, yeah, seriously, if you're going to talk about like pure cinema and it's all down to performance, mm-hmm. and you know it's you on screen,
and the wonderful Vicky,
Vicky with just her vocal talents on the other side of the phone, that's all you need. You don't need to show any. You don't need the special effects and you know and all of this. It's we were just our heart was just like almost stopping at times, and then when your character at the end just gives that pause, that little sigh, and then we found ourselves, we thought we haven't breathed for about a minute, and then like yourself on screen, we exhaled, and then you're going on to the next call. My god, this is absolutely incredible.
The script's based, it's a transcript of a real 99 call, 999 call, sorry. The actual call is, I was so disturbed listening to it, really found it very difficult to listen to because I didn't know the outcome. And the woman, really, the panic, the utter panic in the woman's voice and the way that the operator handled it was incredible. Wow. I mean, I don't know how people do it. It makes me feel really emotional talking about it, actually, because the actual 999 call is really, really upsetting to listen to. And I would hope, I've tried to do justice to it, you know, with the script. And I'm just in awe of people that can take calls like that and literally... It leaves me speechless, it really does. And then, you know, the phone goes down and the next call's in and you know, the a little pause, but you could have time to pause, the next call's through and you're just getting on. And my hat's off to people who take 999 calls. I know a lot, you know, and I'm a big supporter of NHS and a big supporter of, you know, our amazing NHS that really I'm terrified that we're going to lose. Really frightens me. Yeah. We are so lucky in this country to have the NHS and it is a travesty what has been done to it. And, you know, we live in a country that you know, if you're ill, you can go to the doctor. You're not going to die because you can't afford medical care or insurance or what, you know. And anyway, I'm getting going off, but I just, you know, people who volunteer to be operators and take 999 calls, I just think they should be praised to the highest heavens.
Yeah.
And it's all sorts of calls from... literally kittens being stuck up a tree or I've lost my keys to calls where people don't survive and don't live, you know. And I just, that when I read the script and I listened to it, I was really honoured to try and play her. And Caroline was wonderful to work with. Caroline Bartley, she's great, the director. And Vicky and the team, Vanessa the DOP, I mean, it was a fantastic short to do.
Was there any sort of leeway to do any improvisation with that, or was it all 100% scripted?
There might be little bits. I think I've added in sweeties and things like that. I couldn't help myself because I did try and stick to the script and really do it as verbatim as possible. It was interesting, actually, because listening to Vicky and her cries for help, I say sweetie a lot. I couldn't help myself of saying it's okay. So I think there's something. I've only watched it once actually because I find it really hard watching myself. So, and Vicky is amazing in it, and you hear her voice, and you wouldn't you don't doubt for a minute she's that mm-hmm. woman in the burning house. And I couldn't help responding to that as me, I guess, a little bit. So I think I added in a few sweeties and things, but no, it was as the script was for me, as best as I could do that. I did try and keep to the script.
I mean, one of the things I love about it, and I do love a lot about it, is your acting performance in it, because the camera's so tight on you and you have to be so subtle in your performance, both vocally and physically as well. Mm. It's not like, you know, when you're, say, for example, if you're on theatre and you can be more,
give more broad brushstrokes
with it. You've got to be so subtle.
But
you convey everything. And then when it comes down to the call, so it clicks, it goes dead. And there's just that beat, and you take that moment and you close your eyes and you go on to the next call. It just says everything. It really does.
Thank you. I don't feel like I can take the sort of credit for that, because that's a great bit of directing as well from Caroline, you know, and the beats they've got in, and the editor, and I'm always like, oh no, it's not me, because you don't understand the amazing people I've got, right? You know, but thank you, I appreciate that. I feel I'm still learning a lot with film, because I did come from a theatre background. It's very painful when you see your mistakes up on screen, and, you know, getting used to not being that performance with that audience, and then it's gone, and and I'm trying to be a little better at it, because I know I'll learn from it. But the times when you know you've done wrong is when you've done too much on screen. It's like, oh, ouch, that jars, you know, because on screen a whisper is the loudest thing almost. And I mean that not just as in a literal whisper, but a glance, the way your eyelids shut, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. And I love that about film. I love that you can bring it down to the smallest thing, and that's has a big impact on screen, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about reaching people in the back row or you know. I love theatre as well. I do always have a love for theatre, a live performance and starting a story from beginning to end. The more I get into film, the more I'm curious about a lot of things, and I just want to soak it up and try and learn a lot. Mm-hmm. I feel I've got an awful lot to learn. So I've been lucky with the people I've worked that I've had the chance to try and soak up things from them and learn from the people you work with. Mm-hmm. I think it's important as well.
Well, but I'm just glancing at the clock now, and I know it's, yeah,
I yap.
Well, I know.
And on and on.
That's a good thing. It's a good, regular listeners will know that we're called 60 Minutes With, but it's very rare we stick to the 60 minutes. But
thank goodness, because I was like, you're probably, one of them's holding the phone, the other one's getting into their jammies.
No,
no. Wow.
We're always aware as well. We don't want to keep our guests like just here, because we could talk to you all night, obviously.
I do feel like I'm in the living room with you having a cup of tea.
Well, that's fine.
You're more than
welcome into our living room anytime, Kate.
Anytime.
If you're ever up in Glasgow, the same goes as well.
Right.
Always welcome.
We will take you up on that. You do know that, knowing Tina now, that she will take you up on that.
You must. You could do 60 minutes. I could do a 60 minutes podcast in the living room, live from the living room.
Here we go. There's a bucket list for 2016 then.
We could do a Scottish theme. I don't know what it could be, but we could think of something.
Oh, it'd be good, though.
Yeah. We can't let you go, though, because we do. And now, this is, and it is, according to IMDb, it's your first credit. This is a TV series that both myself and Tina...
She knows what we're going to say.
I know what you're going to say.
We love it. And I've got such fond memories, personally speaking, of sitting with my dad watching this TV series.
Me too.
He introduced me to it and brought me up. We were watching this. Now, you were in, for anybody that doesn't know... And if you've never heard of this, please, listeners, go out and watch this series. You were in an episode of Rab C. Nesbitt.
I was, and I think it might have been 1994. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and
I was so young, and I played a girl that worked in the shop. I think that one of the lead characters ended up running away. And honestly, it was such a big thing when you were growing up in Scotland watching Rab Cines. Yeah. But it's brilliant TV, and it was a great thing to start off with, and just to be in. Interesting when you've grown up watching characters and stuff like that. And for my dad, you know, I'd made it because I was in Rab C. Nesbitt.
That's the pinnacle. You know? That is the pinnacle.
Yes. But yeah, oh, that was great fun. It was really good fun. But in Barbara Rafferty, and you know, the cast are, oh, I had a good day that day. And I look about 12 in it. Well, I obviously don't. But now I'm in my 40s, I'm looking back going, oh, he looks so young.
What a fantastic start to your career, though.
Yeah. After I've had a really interesting sort of journey along the way, and been very, very lucky to have worked with the people I have, and just enjoying it, you know. I don't have sort of a set plans or set things. I've just kind of, sorry, you know why I've come to Hull? I've had, oh, that was really weird. It was like a ghost came into the bedroom. That was so strange. The living room door kind of opened a bit, and then it opened full, but no one was there. We forgot an explanation. It's fine. My partner's come in and he's opened the door. I thought you were going to have a live ghost.
There's no
experience.
Ghost.
It's the first time I've shut up in the hour. My partner had opened the bloody bedroom window, hadn't he? See, I've got an imagination. Like, in fact, do you know what? Ralph Ineson, who's in The Witch with me, which actually is a movie that's coming out next month in the US and then in March in Britain, he said that I've been born with twice as much nerve endings and feelings as everyone else. Because it's like I feel everything twice as much as everyone else. So anyway, I'd already had a ghost coming in the living room, but here it was my boyfriend opening the bedroom window. So
what's he doing opening the window when you live in Glasgow? It's freezing.
We're made of tough stuff up here. We've got kind of like, what would I say, waterproof kind of skin, and cool. You know, we're hardy souls here. And actually, today's been warmer than, it's been a bit warmer today. So
minus 50 in Glasgow today.
Minus 50. So we're getting there. It's nearly summer. No.
Oh, yeah.
How's the weather with you anyway?
It's freezing, but probably it's colder where you are.
Yeah,
well,
I'm sure
I think today it is actually. We've had it really cold, and then today has been a bit milder, so can't complain. The sun was out, which was lovely.
Oh, it just rains constantly here, doesn't it, Dave?
Yeah, we've had a lot of rain here as well. Yeah.
So tell us about The Witch. We're so looking forward to it.
The Witch.
And so scared that they're not going to show it in any of the cinemas near us.
No, it's coming out. So we've got a February the 19th release wide across the USA. And then it's opening UK and rest of the world from the 11th of March, I think it is.
Right.
So you should be able to see it fine. Well, we made this movie in 2014, and we made it in Northern Ontario in Canada. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting movie. And the director, Robert Eggers, is a fascinating man. And basically the premise of the script is we are a Puritan family, it's 1630s, and we are from Northern England, Yorkshire, and we've moved to New England on this plantation, and we get banished because we're really religious almost, and Ralph's character, William, kind of has a disagreement with the elders, and we get banished from the plantation, so we set up home, we build a house next to these woods. And I'm not going to say a lot because I know there's been a lot of press and I know there's been a lot of reviews and stuff, but the less you know about the actual plot, the better. But basically, I see it like, I know it's a horror and that, but I see it much more like a kind of Grimm's fairy tale type horror.
Yeah, all right.
It's not got a lot of kind of modern jump scares and, you know, kind of gore. I mean, you know, it's like a story of a family imploding, basically, and what happens and how they start to suspect each other. An incident happens early on in the film, and the family start to kind of turn on each other, and it's just, you know, it's really interesting. And it's all in old dialect, and Rob spent 5 years researching it, and some of the dialogues lifted from actual books and writings from the time. And it's beautifully beautifully filmed. And the sets, like, they built the house with the old-fashioned methods so that it would have the right marks on the wood, you know, and if you did it with modern methods, it wouldn't look right, the costumes, and it's just it was a great film to work on.
Well, I've watched the trailer for it, and we tend to, because we're big film fans, Dave especially, we don't watch trailers anymore because they tell you the whole film.
A lot. Uh-huh.
You just sit there and there's the film and you just think, oh,
I know.
You know.
I know.
But with The Witch, when it's... And it wasn't because... This is before I knew we were going to talk to you, because it looked... not Hammer horror-y, but the fact that it was a British-made horror film. Mm-hmm. I watched the trailer and it looks like it's cracking.
Oh, the trailers are great. It's about a British family, but it's actually a American-Canadian co-production.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Rob Eggers is American.
Is it?
Yeah, and we made it in Canada, and there was American and Canadian producers, but a British family. So it was a real mix, and made with such love.
Yeah.
Just such commitment, and we really enjoyed making it. So it comes out next month, which is interesting. But yeah, the trailers are scary. I'm really frightened. I've not seen a lot of horrors. I used to watch them when I was younger, like a teenager and stuff, but I get terrified of, even as soon as I hear a bar of music, I'm like getting the remote control, turn it over, and then my boyfriend has to come with me to the bathroom and stand there and then take me back, because even a creak and I'm like, you know, it's ridiculous.
Well, you're in another horror film. Is it the Outcast?
Outcast, yeah. Cole McCarthy movie.
Yeah.
I play a kind of that. I really like that. That's a very low budget, independent. Yeah. Really enjoyed making it, and I play Mary, who's a kind of woman who looks human but isn't all human, because she comes from a kind of people. These kind of people in Ireland that kind of live in the shadows. An old. Oh, it's difficult to explain, actually, and I ended up. We moved to this council estate. So it's kind of set in modern day time with a kind of strange old fashioned story. And James Nesbitt ends up kind of chasing me throughout the film, me and my son. And there's a kind of love story and a beast. And I like making them.
Yeah.
But watching them. So frightening. Let the right one in, I would love to watch. But even looking at the picture of that, I don't know. I think I would faint or something.
No,
fear.
You wouldn't.
Oh, it's a great movie.
It's great, a great
Babadook.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that.
Even better,
I'm frightened of everything. Tales of the Unexpected have me quivering in my boots. You know,
if
that's
you want to watch a good horror
with.
Film that's scary,
no,
It Follows is a really good one.
Yeah.
It's
I can't. I really wish I could. I can't.
We'll come round here and we'll cut you up on the settee and I'll put my arm round you.
You would need to hold me tight. I'd love to do that.
Oh, I would. I would do as well. I'd just sit here cuddling you and I go, all right, Kate.
Oh, honestly, I'd be leaping and jumping. You would hate watching the film with me and I'd be screaming. And it's like the same of violence. You know, you literally watch it through the tiniest hole between your fingers because you're like, oh, my God, oh, no, no. But yeah, I wish I was a bit less scared because I'm missing out on some really interesting movies. But The Witch is very, I would say that the feeling from The Witch is a really unsettling one, you know. You just get unsettled by the feel of it, the colour palette, the greys. It's beautiful. Yeah. And I've also got another movie coming out around about the same time, actually, called Couple in a Hole, which, surprisingly enough, is about a couple living in a hole in the ground. And it's directed by a Belgian director called Tom Geens. And my husband is Paul Higgins, fantastic actor, and he is brilliant in Couple in a Hole.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm not going to say too much, but as the film goes on, you start to understand why this couple are living in this hole in the ground. And then it's a beautiful, well, I say beautiful when people go, oh, God, it's grim and it's this and it's that. And I'm like, oh, no, it's beautiful. But it's a love story and also about grief and mental health and all sorts of things. And it's really, really different kind of movie as well. So that's kind of coming out at the same time. So that's the kind of things I've got coming up as well. So, but Paul Higgins is incredible in Couple in a Hole. And we went to Dynard with it, and I saw it for the first time, and I had tears. And then I've watched it a couple of times since at London Film Festival. And his performance makes me cry so much. Yeah. He's a beautiful actor. So
excellent.
Yes.
What's 2016 got lined up for you so far then, Kate?
Well, I don't really know at the moment. I've got a few things kind of in the pipeline that have not been confirmed or official yet. So I'm kind of just waiting to see what's going to come about and what happens. Open to suggestions. No, there's a few things kind of in the air, but there's another thing I'll be in. I don't know when it's coming out, but I worked on a really great drama called One of Us, directed by Will McGregor, who directed Poldark.
Oh, and it's new Poldark or proper old Poldark?
Oh gosh, I don't know the difference between them.
Do you not remember? You're younger than me.
Oh, new Poldark then. New Poldark.
It's gorgeous Aidan Poldark then.
Oh,
not...
I didn't know Poldark had been done before.
Kate, you're joking.
Is that a travesty? I've said that.
Oh, my God, like... Kate. Oh, no, you're going to have to Google Poldark.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, yeah. Robin Ellis is the real Poldark.
Oh.
Yeah, it was in the 70s. It was something my mum used to watch.
Oh, I didn't and realize then, this.
Yeah, it was early 90s. They released all the DVDs and I was pregnant with my son and ended up reading all the books and then buying the DVDs. And it's one of those series that you just get completely obsessed with.
Oh, cool.
So the new Poldark is all sort of sweeping vistas and Aidan, what's his face, who's gorgeous. and I look at it and I think, that's not Poldark.
I hadn't watched Poldark. You see, I knew of it and I'd seen bits of it, but I just been so busy lately. I don't get a lot of time to sit down and watch TV. You know, I'll watch and catch up a lot or different ways. But Will McGregor, the director, was great. And he'd directed One of Us. And it's a kind of thriller set in Scotland. Mm. So that's going to be coming out as well.
Is that going to be ITV or BBC or?
Oh, it's BBC One. Yeah, BBC One. So I'm not quite sure when it's going to come out, but you'll be able to see it in BBC at some Lovely. Point in the future. Which is...
And BBC pay more as well, I hope. Well, I read I read on IMDb that you've just made a film called Prevenge.
Oh,
as well.
Oh, do you know what? Oh, I did a day in Prevenge. It's Alice Lowe, who is in Sightseers. Oh my god, I love that film so much.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That's a film that I was 1 minute laughing and the next minute with my hand over my mouth going. Yeah. Yeah. This is horrific. How could I be? You know, I felt really awful for laughing. Alice, I think she's amazing. And yeah, so it's her movie. So I just had a day in that. I had such a great time. And yeah, it was just great to work with her. She's really lovely and really talented. And yeah, that'll be a good film to watch out for, I tell you. It's fantastic.
Is it a really comedy or...?
Fantastic. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say.
No. Okay.
I don't know.
We'll ask you.
But I'm sure there's stuff on Twitter, you know, like the Prevenge. So it'll probably have a little bit on it. They'll probably...
Oh, have a look.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's been some articles about it. So they'll probably say more about it. I always err on the cautious side because...
Yeah.
The fear of because being the one.
Well, you have been in Game of Thrones, so you must be terrified of saying
Do you know what it is now? I just get used to not. Because I know that the best way, if you can, is to watch some. No, it's like what you say about avoiding trailers or that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than watching some and you really have no idea what's going to happen. And I also just think it's not my story to tell, so, you know, as in like, so I do, I'm always very cautious. Sometimes, you know, I mean, even Kenny, I mean, with Prometheus, Kenny, my partner, always practices lines with me. Mm. He didn't, I was like, you're practicing nothing. I didn't want him even knowing my lines or anything because I just felt that way that, you know, if people were like, oh, you know, asking things, he would genuinely... just go, I don't have a clue, you know, I don't have a clue.
He asked you to nick him something off the set and you didn't.
He didn't. You know who you remind me of? I just watched today for it. Oh, I love it. The Breakfast Club.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be that girl who's just like lifting things like ashtrays and like teaspoons from cafes, aren't you? Oh, I love The Breakfast Club. Oh, Molly Ringwald, she's amazing, isn't she? That film's fantastic, isn't it?
It is, yeah, definitely.
You forget how fantastic the sort of themes are in it and the things you talk about and all their lovely nuances and stories. And oh, I could look at Molly all day. Her face, you know, that way
she
when you just got all these
different, does she now?
No, she's beautiful. She I just think she's such a great actress. And I was looking at her today going and just all those subtleties like flitting across her face, you know, beautiful acting. I like it. I like a lot of the in fact I've been doing a bit of a gorge. What else have I been watching? I've got to see Under the Skin. I've been dying to see that for ages. Incredible.
Yeah.
Like something I've never seen anything like it before. I just was mesmerised by it.
If you ever get a chance to read the book of Under the Skin.
Yeah, I definitely
read it. It's completely different.
Oh, really?
But it's still Scottish.
Uh-huh.
But like,
oh,
you know the bit in the film where she picks that man up and they sort of go back to his house and they can't have sex because she hasn't actually got a fanny. There's none of that in it. It is literally her picking men up and very detailed descriptions of how they're processed.
Wow.
But it's an amazing book.
Yeah, oh, I'd like to read. Because it's Michael Faber, isn't it? No, have I got that wrong? It is.
Yeah. No, I can't remember his last name.
Oh, God.
No, I know.
I was thinking Michael Faber, but I'm now thinking, because I'm sure... Sorry, hear me out again. make it so funny. Talk amongst yourselves. No. Let me think. What did we do? Yes, it is Michael Faber.
Yeah.
It is. Because I just read his latest novel. Oh, it's brilliant.
What's that called? I'll have to have a look for it.
It is called... Da, da, da.
Now you're putting her under pressure now. This is
no, I'm now on at my, hang on, I'm at my little books and I'm looking at the titles because it's really good and I want to find it to recommend it. I'd never read any of Michael Faber before, you see, and I didn't realise that he'd written Under the Skin until the film came out and I heard people talking about it and I was like, because this other book, oh gosh, now I'm looking through all my books. I do excuse me. I'm really awful with names, and I've said to people, oh, here it is, The Book of Strange New Things. That's what it's called.
I have to get that.
It's really good, and that kind of feel that Under the Skin gave me watching, I got reading his book. So it was interesting. You saying, I'll read the book, even though it's different. It's interesting that I got a feeling from Under the Skin that I got from the Michael Faber's most recent book. So, and I also watched recently Ex Machina.
It's great, isn't it?
It's amazing. That made me cry. I just found it really emotional and
great ending as well.
Really great ending. Panicked. I had quite a panic attack and I realised he was, you know, locked.
That's who you need to make a film with, Oscar Isaac.
Oh, he's great, because I also started watching Drive today because I've got a lot of films I need to catch up on, and he's in that. Also great in that as well.
Drive is a brilliant film, isn't
it? Well, I'm halfway through. I'm about three quarters of the way through it. It's really good. Isn't he brilliant,
Ryan Gosling? He is amazing. Yeah.
He's great. He's great.
We watched what's that film that he's in that we watch with the bankers, Dave? What's it called?
It's The Big Short.
The Big Short that Ryan Gosling is in as well.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's very... It's if you don't know about money things, though, it's like, you know, we're not thick and we're very quite politically active and stuff, but we had no idea what the hell they were talking about. It was all to do with mortgages and... You know, the global collapse.
Quite technical speak.
But it was a really great film, despite not knowing what they were talking about. Major bloody cross, though.
It did make us cross as well.
Unless you're a Tory, you would have gone, this is rather good. And we were sitting there going,
no, I'm definitely not. And it's definitely something I'd like to see because it's, I'm not a Tory. Far from it. I've been catching up on films. Another film I saw recently was called I Only Want You to Love Me, the Rainer Fassbinder one. I'm so bad with titles. I've been trying to sort of just watch different types of films, really, ones that I've heard people recommend or...
Well, I find this so refreshing, though, because, you know, obviously we're just, you know, we're fans of movies, but you're somebody who's, you know, you're on the other side of the camera and you see a different side of the business that we do. But the very fact that you still get excited about watching movies as well is, like, so refreshing, even though you see it from both sides of the camera. That's really good.
Because again, my partner says sometimes, because I'm literally, you know, I'm an audience member that sits with my mouth wide open, like drinking it all in and, you know, being scared and saying, oh, I'm too scared. And he's like, but, you know, you're behind the scenes, you know how it works. And I'm like, but I just get lost in film worlds, you know, and I like that. And then when you've worked in them, you can really appreciate, I mean, getting a film made is... A miracle to get films made, you know, that's such a process and funding and all the aspects of bringing it together. And when you watch great movies, you're just in awe of what
that's
you see in front
though,
of you.
I think it just highlights.
Have you got a favourite film?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about that today. You know, if I get asked, what's your favourite film, what would you say? Oh, and I just think,
or a top five.
So many. I tell you, a film I absolutely adore is Tyrannosaur, you know, the Paddy Considine movie.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Oh,
we've got a friend that can't watch that because he knows that a dog gets kicked.
He
can't watch it.
Oh, I know someone else who really struggles with that as well. And you know what? It's so sad. Mm-hmm. It's such a sad movie. The performances in that are so incredible. And it wrung me out. If I'm mm-hmm. lying and they're wanting to lie on the floor and bawl my eyes out, that's my kind of movie. You know, when I've been feel like I've been put through a mangle, I love it. So I love Tyrannosaur. I love Dead Man's Shoes.
Yeah,
is another fantastic movie that I love. I loved, like, when I grew up, like all the Godfather movies and like Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah.
Things like that. Fish Tank's a big favourite of mine, of Andrea's.
Yeah, it's a great film.
I wish I did have one. It would be easier. Four Lions is another.
That's great, great.
That I thought that was just an incredible film. I really did. Brilliant movie. And then I love, like, Ladybird. Kez, so I tend to like, you know, I guess when I say sexy beast.
Well, you like gritty things then.
I do like gritty things. I mean, I do love going and watching, being lost in kind of big, you know, sets, and I like rom-com and I like a lot of things, but I like to be, as I said, put through a mangle and do you know what else I like? Although the complete opposite of being put through a mangle, Step Brothers. I watch that movie at least. I probably watch that movie once every couple of months.
Oh my God, I love that
movie. They are
sing the song. Bones.
They have got their characters down to a T. The tantrums, the way they act, the language. I mean, they are genius.
Balls on the drum.
And you know, all that kind of real. It's just brilliant. Brilliant.
Please tell me you want to work for Prestige Worldwide.
Oh, and when they're dressing up as all the bad neighbours when they're trying to sell the house, and just it's brilliant. And then the whole, you know, affair with the sister-in-law, and it's just genius. So I've got a real eclectic mix, because then I also love things like Paris, Texas. I love Rear Window. I'm a big Hitchcock fan. Rear Window is one of my favourite movies ever. So, yeah, I love film, I guess.
Well, I'll give you another tip now. If ever you have time, bored, and you've got a long time where you could listen to a podcast, this is one that I've been banging on about for a good few months now, is a podcast called The Secret History of Hollywood. And the guy who does it is a chef, and his name's Adam. And he's done a three-parter on Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh.
It's incredible. And he makes these. They're 7 hours long, but, you know, you can pause them. And he's just brought one out now about all the gangster movies with James Cagney in. And
Humphrey Bogart. Really? That sounds amazing. And it's called, what's it called again?
The Secret History of Hollywood.
Secret History of Hollywood.
I'll send you a link if you like.
Yeah, that would be great, because I was going to say that by the time if I move to go and get a pen, I'm going to turn into a Dalek. So.
I feel so bad that we've kept you for so long.
Oh, no, you know what? I'm sorry. No, it's me. Every time I asked a question, I gave you a 20-minute answer.
Oh,
so.
But it's been lovely.
It's been fantastic.
I've really
well.
Enjoyed talking to you. Sorry. I really have.
What
Thank
we need
you.
To do as well, before you go, please, Kate, you know, we live in this age of social media. What's the best way that people can follow you online?
Well, I'm on Twitter as let me think. It's my name. It's not a silly name. Let me see. Twitter is. I'm quite a Luddite, but I've managed Twitter. I'm on Dickie_Kate at Dickie_Kate. Or I'm also on Instagram. I'm a massive photo fan, and I'm on Instagram as Inna Fankel. Now, Inna Fankel. just in a fankle in Scottish means you're in a bit of a mess. So you're if you say something's all fankled up, it's all tied up and it's all get into a kind of knot and you can't quite untie it. So in a fankle is all one word, and that's me on Instagram as well.
That's great.
So, and I don't post selfies. It's not, I don't worry, I'm not pouting at the camera. God forbid.
How do you spell in a fankle?
In a fankle is I-N-A-F. I'm doing it as the Instagram way. Obviously, it's three different words. And then fankle is spelled.
Oh, I got you. There you are. I found you.
Are you looking at it now?
Yeah.
See,
just added you.
What you'll see as well is quite a lot. My daughter has a variety of animal masks, full latex animal masks.
Like a horse.
Yes. Now, do you know what the name of the horse is? Joffrey. Can you believe that? She's never seen, obviously, Game of Thrones because she's 11. She admitted she'd sneak to look at my death on YouTube, but she's never watched it. But Joffrey's been about, I don't know. Anyway, when she first got the mask and I was like, oh, and what are you going to call it? She was like, Joffrey. I was like, no. So there's Joffrey the horse.
Yeah.
We've got Sandwich the unicorn. There's a sandwich a bunny. There's a unicorn. Anyway, we've got a horse, a cat, a bunny, a unicorn and a panda, and we go out. She goes out. Well, I don't wear the mask, although I wish I could. I think people would arrest me and think I was really weird, but she goes out with this mask on and we go to the park and we go for coffee or and she wears this mask. So I've got a wee hashtag on Instagram called girl in a horse mask or girl in a cat mask, whatever. If you look up girl in a horse mask or one word hashtag, you will see all of the different Joffrey photos.
I'm sitting here now looking at the picture of the unicorn, and Dave, if you don't buy me one of these unicorn heads,
well, this is funny. It's your unicorn thing, because when I listened to that podcast, suddenly you start talking about the love of the unicorn, and I was like, damn, if it was a video Skype, I'd have worn her mask. And that has been how I would have greeted you. But then as I went on, I thought, oh no, hang on, the unicorn is something to do with the programme. So I didn't bring up the unicorn because I thought that you would just think I was being really weird. And I thought, she obviously doesn't have a unicorn thing. It's just to do with this TV thing. I would have talked to you through the mask of the unicorn if I'd known.
It's a game.
Yeah.
Is this
Doug? What's it called again?
The Witcher. Yeah. For any listeners that are confused, this is the previous podcast that we did with Doug Cockle, who is Geralt of Rivia in The Witcher. And yeah, Tina has got this obsession of joining Geralt on a unicorn.
Is this some dream you've had, Tina, that you're wanting to bring to life?
No, there's. Well, I'm quite rare because even though I'm 51, since I've met Dave, you know, we've known each other about 10 years, haven't we, Dave? And I would never think about playing games on a PS4. And Dave just said to me one day, just go and have a go. And I really enjoy playing games. And
cool.
Witcher is one of these games. And there's a part in it, and get the character of Geralt in this game is this gorgeous, like, wizardy bloke who's really fit with long white hair and big muscles, and he chops people's heads off. But he has sex with women.
Unicorn. My God, his thigh muscles must be strong.
Oh, they are.
That's quite awkward, isn't it? On the back. I hope it's not on the horn of the unicorn. It has to be on the back of the unicorn.
When I met Doug Cockle, was at the same Comic Con as you, and I said to him, "Oh, because he's such a lovely man.
He sounded lovely.
He's so lovely." I said, "I'm going to go. I'm so excited. I'm going to go and meet Kate Dickie now. I'm going to go and talk to her." And he said, "Well, if she ever wants a ride of my unicorn." So now you know, Kate, if ever you want to ride on a unicorn with Doug Cockle, I can arrange it for you.
Well, you know what, I'll give you a shout if I ever do, Tina. I will give you a shout. I will. I will. Yes, I might think about that one carefully before I give you an answer. Oh, no, but he sounded really nice on the podcast. I thought as well.
Nice guy. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was good. Yeah. Well, what we'll do, the links that you've just given me there, Kate, obviously to any listeners, if you go to our website and at the end of the show, I'll give you the links to our website. All the links to how you can find and follow Kate online will be on there, obviously, as you know, as they always are. And for the sake of the show, Kate, we will say our goodbyes, but obviously off air, we will say our personal goodbyes.
Thank you.
It's been so lovely to chat
yes,
with you.
Yes, it has.
And thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending the time with us this evening.
Oh, not at all. It's been a really good blether, as I said. I was looking forward to a good blether, and I just apologise for my yapping on and on and on into the night.
It's
been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed myself. Oh, thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And yes, I'll speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Well, of course. Remember, we've now got, you know, expect a knock on the door the next time we're, you know, up in Scotland.
Oh, well, listen, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. Like you say,
thanks a lot.
For the sake of this episode, goodbye, Kate.
Goodbye. Thank you, everyone. Thanks. Bye.
The alarm bell, of course, means it's unfortunately the end of another episode. But you can keep updated on everything that Kate's doing via her social media. All you need to do is go to the podcast notes on our website, go to 60minuteswith.co.uk, and everything you need to know will be on there. There's also a contact us form if you want to send us an email, or you can email us direct, which is contact@60minuteswith.co.uk. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/60minuteswith. We're also at 60 Minutes With on Twitter and on Instagram. And as always, that is the numerical 60 and not the alphabetical one. iTunes reviews, Stitcher Radio reviews, and all ratings, always most welcome. And that's it. That's it for this episode. We'll be back again quite soon. We've got a lot lined up for you. We've got more interviews. We've got more of the SOS shows with Tina. The Married With Children shows are coming back. We've got the dates planned for the monthly entertainment shows, so they're going to be hitting you at the end of every month, and a lot more besides. So please keep your subscriptions active. Until then, whoever you are, wherever you are, thank you for listening, and we'll be back again soon.